I'm Fathery.
I'm Joel.
And I'm Miss Taylor.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 335th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And tonight, we are talking about Star Trek, the original series, Season 1, Episode 18, The Squire of Gothos, written by Paul Schneider and directed by Don McDougall. This is another backtracking retrospective where we take a look back at a legacy episode of Star Trek, and right now we are focusing on episodes that we think are going to be especially relevant to the upcoming season of Strange New Worlds. And I would like to let everyone know that next week we have another one planned, and Taylor and I will be joined by Dave. He's making a return to the show to discuss another TOS episode. I'll tell you which one it is at the end of this show, but last week we did What Are Little Girls Made Of, the Roger Corby episode. We know we're getting a new Corby in Strange New Worlds Season 3, and that was fun to talk about with Rachel last week. We have some subspace transmissions from that episode that I'll share at the end of the show, but yeah, right now we are focused on Trelane. A lot of people think that is who Rhys Darby is playing in that trailer we saw for Strange New Worlds Season 3. Not the recent trailer, but the teaser before that. He does like a Q finger snap, so it's like, oh, he's dressed like Trelane, he has Q powers. Is it Trelane? I don't know, but we'll find out. Before we talk about Squire Gothos, though, just a bit of quick housekeeping, per usual. I need to start things off, like always, with giving a huge thank you and shout out to the wonderful people in the Text Trek Patreon. Keep the weekly show going, keep the Starship Texas flying. Thank you so very, very much. Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Dot, Geek Filter, Quark Spar, Stephanie Durantas, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A, Joel Vallis, Benginium, Arthur Lamoureux, our associate producer, Chris Garris, Dave Farabee, Dave A. Gregory, and our anonymous supporters. And if you are watching us live on Friday, you are in luck because you haven't missed it yet. Tomorrow, Saturday, June 21st at 3:30 p.m. Central Time, we are going to have our monthly Patreon watch party. This month, we are watching the Voyager episode Repression and the animated series episode Mud's Passion. It'll be a double feature. Joel, how would you describe the Voyager episode Repression? It's kind of hard to give like the quick
the actual plot. The reason I picked it is because they have the 3D monster movie they watch. And then I was like, oh yeah, the rest of the episode's cool too, but someone is like putting people into coma on Voyager and they're not near a planet or other ships, so it's this weird, I guess, locked starship mystery. And Tuvok has to investigate.
In Detective Tuvok episode.
Yeah.
And the animated series episode Mudd's Passion, that is the time that Harry Mudd shows up in the animated series with with weird drugs. But
he's always a little problematic guy, isn't he?
A little.
It's a cartoon. It's small.
But with all the
very problematic little cartoon.
The Chapel Spock talk with Strange New Worlds returning, it'll be a fun time to revisit that because there is some Chapel and Spock sparks in that episode. That's actually sparks. The one episode. I don't know if Jess Bush and Ethan Peck have seen it, but if they haven't, I would love to show that episode to them just to get their reactions.
Yes. That'd be gold.
But we do one of those every month. You can join the Text Trek Patreon at whatever tier you're able to help out at to come to those monthly watch parties. As little as $2 a month will get you in. But if you can afford to be more generous, there are some additional perks as well. So please check that out. We certainly appreciate our Patreon supporters. And there's not really a ton of news right now other than, I guess, Strange New Worlds has had its premiere at the festival in New York last weekend. So good for them, the people who saw it then. Everyone else, I have to wait a little bit longer. July 17th, almost here, weeks away. But in the meantime, there is plenty of classic Trek to talk about, like Squire of Gothos right now. So I'm just going to quickly recap the episode by reading the synopsis I grabbed off of Memory Alpha, and then I'll expand on that a little bit. But the synopsis reads, "The Enterprise is captured by Trelane, the childish ruler of Gothos." And yes, they find they find what would you describe him? He's LARPing as like an English aristocrat. Well, I guess he's like a retired general.
French. I was thinking he was more French than English, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, more English than French.
Yeah,
but
real life history is very slim.
very European. You got to think, like, if you're an alien 900 light years away, like, England and France are like right next to each other. It's basically the same thing, right? I know that would piss off,
France, like, over England.
Yeah. Any Frenchman or Englishman who hears me say that will be mad as hell. But yeah, Trelane, he's like a fanboy of old school European imperialism and aristocracy and dressing fancy and talking about war and conquest. And basically, when he finds some humans from Earth, he's so excited. And Kirk is like, "Hey, this shit went out of fashion a long time ago. We don't want to play 1800s with you." And we're eventually shown that Trelane, as much trouble as he causes with his almost godlike power, very Q-like, very, especially Encounter at Farpoint, the first Q episode. But
yeah.
We eventually learn he is just a child raised by these two glowing green lights who are like, "No, Trelane, you were a naughty boy. You're going to bed with no dinner. And sorry, Captain Kirk, please go along your way. And apologies." So
he's mean to his pets. We don't like that here.
No. Very much. Yeah. Irresponsible pet ownership. He clearly was not mature enough for that just yet. But Joel Taylor and I have been watching this episode and studying it all week. So, you know, we kind of got an idea of how each other feel about it. But just why don't you share with us, as well with everyone else, just let us know your broad impressions on the episode before we get into the episode breakdown. Give us your opening statement on the Squire of Gothos.
Well, I always liked this one since I was a little kid. When I first watched through TOS when I was like, I don't know, 8 something like that,
back when it was on TV a lot in the syndication.
Yeah, years. it was on every day at 6, and my dad liked TOS, so we kind of had dinner and watched it every night. So this one was immediately fun. Like, it was all, even for a little kid. I like it now too, but it's just accessible and fun, because like Trelane is bizarre, and he's kind of over the top, not in the same way as Q and Delancey, but similar. And, you know, he's making people do all this stuff and making people play the harpsichord. And generally, I think he's half just into harpsichord more than military things. He doesn't talk about it as much, but it's a really fun episode. And it's that early TOS kind of episode that could just be a Twilight Zone episode. You wouldn't even need to have Kirk and Spock. I mean, we have the characters and they do great things for their characters too, but there's season one has a few of those that just general sci-fi ones, which would work pretty much anywhere. But then we get McCoy and Spock and Kirk to do some fun things. And yeah, great all around.
Cool. Taylor, why don't you tell us your broad thoughts on Squire of Gothos?
Yeah, I remember watching this one for the first time and thinking it was fun seeing his little castle boardroom set up, because there's so many good little cameos and like fun things to kind of pick apart and, you know, kind of start looking for what is he doing? What's he thinking? Like, it's just kind of like a kid's collection of items. It's so random. And I think it was really whimsical, which is what I really appreciated about this episode. And Trelane being so childlike and kind of fun. And like, there's some, like, every time that Kirk slaps him, like, he like bitch slaps him across the face, and it's just so funny. Like, every time, like, every time I laugh, it's just so good because he's so excited about it. He's like, yes, conflict. But he's like joyful about it. He's like, he's such an instigator, and it's really fun to watch him like keep poking at Kirk and like his like bantering with Spock and stuff. So yeah, I thought this was a really fun episode too.
Yeah, sounds like he got a real kick out of William Campbell's performance as Trelane.
Yeah, I also knew immediately something was up with the mirror because I was like, they won't just like put mirrors on set.
You reminded
like, pain in the
me
ass.
Of that. But yeah, yeah. When we were watching it for the first time, like as soon as
it
you saw
huge.
Him, you're like, yeah. Oh yeah, there's something weird about that mirror. He's looking at that mirror too much. Like, you figured it out before anyone said it.
Yeah,
like,
as soon as it was up there, because they frame it like where he's playing the harpsichord and you see his face through the reflection first. I was like, oh, that's going to be important. I was like, I don't know what it's going to do, but I was like, that's going to be something.
That was one of the funnest things about watching all 900 plus episodes of Star Trek with Taylor, is that she has such a keen eye for specifically wardrobe and set design. So like, she notices like, oh yeah, that's kind of a unusual thing to have like a mirror like that on set like that, where it'd be a pain in the ass to shoot around. So there must be a plot related reason for it.
Yeah, I'm like, they would only go through that trouble if it meant something. So
yeah.
Well, for me, I also really like this episode. It's one that I've always enjoyed quite a bit, and it's one that, like, all my life, people have pointed out a lot because, in the post-TNG world, it is kind of, oh, there's some easy parallels to draw between Trelane and Q, and a lot of people even speculate that this is a younger version of John DeLancey's character Q in TNG. Mm. Like, this might have been him as, like, a baby or a infant or something before he fully developed into the John DeLancey character.
Yeah, it actually gives a lot of like Q Jr., like from Voyager. Like, I see a lot of that in this, where Q is like struggling to keep up with his child.
Yeah, and I never necessarily like needed Trelane to be connected to Q. I'm fine if they're separate things. Maybe Strange New Worlds will connect those. We'll find out in a few weeks.
Yes.
But to me, like, the most interesting thing about this episode is that the idea of examining the flaws of humanity and, like, our flawed past and how humanity can grow and mature, but then you still have, like, that ugly history. And the writer of the episode, Paul Schneider, who also wrote Balance of Terror, which I think is also easy to interpret as kind of an anti-war story, that episode had like these soldiers on opposite sides who were reluctantly in battle against each other, but also like concerned that their actions might lead to like a bigger war. It's a very Cold War type story to be telling in the 60s. And then here, Paul Schneider has said that the inspiration for this episode was that he would witness, little kids. It's something that like all little kids do, or I guess mainly like little boys do in our culture. But something like I did a lot, but he saw, little kids on the street, playing war. They would just go outside and make believe they were in war with each other. And I assume Paul Schneider was a World War II veteran. He was born in the 20s, so I assumed he served in the war. But a lot of, there's a lot of kind of anti-war, or at least like a kind of a, even before like the war in Vietnam and kind of the resistance to that, there was still kind of a so many people in our country had experienced war firsthand in that war, and there people kind of took it seriously, or at least a lot of people of that generation really did, and knew it was something to avoid and not something you'd want to make believe or like have fun with, or make like games about or something like that. So it's kind of like that idea of like, oh, it's such a childish thing to kind of enjoy war, enjoy like these conflicts. And you can see like the fun and the pageantry of all of, like Trelane has like his battle flag collection, talks about, like imagine like, like Roman soldiers marching around, like the glory and conquest and all that. But it's honestly very childish. And I'm sad to say it's still in this day and age a very topical story where we are right now, at the time of recording. This morning when I got up, I was like, oh, wow, is like anyone like, shot nukes yet? Or, what's going on with Iran? What's going on with Pakistan and India? I think that there is still not enough criticism and reluctance of war, especially in, you know, the age of like these big global conflicts. So I really respect the story for having that anti-war message and kind of showing how infantile it is to celebrate that part of humanity. And also just Trelane being a big man-child with all this power, with like too much power, and how much harm this like immature idiot can do. I don't know. That also felt very like Elon Musk in 2025 too. But I think you can also read this as like a story about cultural appropriation. Trelane is a guy who just like sees Earth. He's like, oh man, like all this Earth shit is really cool. Look, they have armies and ships and battles and, you know, all these cool nations conquering other nations. And he doesn't really understand what's the dialogue in the episode. It's the form, but not the substance. And that happens a lot with like cultural appropriation. You know, people are like, oh, like I really like the way, you know, this other culture looks, or the way that this artwork or this wardrobe or whatever. I'm just going to start, you know, dressing up like that, or, you know, whatever. And and people like don't really understand the substance behind these things. So, but yeah, we can go ahead and get into our episode breakdown, where we will run through the episode beat by beat, starting off at the beginning. The episode opens with the Enterprise crossing through the star desert. So the thing here, they're en route to planet Beta 6, but there's not supposed to be any planets on the way there. We got some classic Spock and McCoy banter.
And more coffee than it's ever been in Star Trek, I swear.
Well, they drink a lot of coffee in the original series.
I know, but not that much. It's like everyone had it. It's like the Star Desert is wearing them down. They all need coffee. It's like
they're all about to
one
fall
or two
asleep.
People had it. Kirk would have it and maybe one other, but yeah, there's like,
it's because it's darker. They're all like more tired because there's less light out there, like in their star desert or whatever. I don't know. It's like midnight.
Would they encounter a planet that shouldn't be there in the middle of nowhere? And I assume this is like a rogue planet, like we saw in Enterprise, where just like there's no star, it's just a planet by itself. Yeah. But Sulu and Kirk are banished from the bridge, leaving Spock in command.
Boing!
Yeah, we get that classic sound effect. They reuse the ever-loving shit out of that sound effect in the original series, but
it's so funny because I want to know, like, do you think that when they disappear, like, is Trelane making that noise? Or is it like, I don't know. Like, is it actually a sound that's happening, or is it just like a sound effect that they want you to have for the show? You know, like
I hope
like
Trelane's
an audience,
making it.
Yeah,
like an audience really like laugh track or something where like the crew doesn't know that sound is happening, or is it like the crew also hears that sound happening?
I mean, that's like if you're watching like a normal like, I don't know, what's like a typical TV, like some like cop show, like a modern day cop show, and there's a car chase, and like the car makes like a big like screech when it goes around the corner. You know, like that's something like they add in. It's not something that was like actually there. So it's like, do the characters actually hear that noise, or is that just something like only meant for the audience? It's almost kind of like the score, the music, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Spock and Scotty and the rest of the Enterprise, they can't make heads or tail of where Kirk or Sulu are, so they assume they find like this part of the planet that seems like it might be habitable. For the most part, the planet is covered in volcanic storms, tornadic storms, some really nasty storms. We don't see any of the volcanoes, of course, because they couldn't do lava until the animated series. But
much to Gene's chagrin, yes, but
if you watch the remastered version of this episode, like what's streaming on Paramount Plus, they do kind of a cool job adding some. You can see volcanoes and like lightning storms and stuff on the planet, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's not too much difference. It's almost all between the original and the remastered. It's almost all the planet and a few shots of the Enterprise.
But we also have Jaeger and DeSalle on the bridge, so they'll have kind of big roles in this episode. Kind of boring characters.
Yeah, but they were just little placeholders and got the job done.
Yeah, and something for Trelane to like relate to, because he gets to play off their French and Germanness. He's like, I know about your people.
But speaking of Trelane, we get like the first hint of Trelane's style, I guess, when Uhura receives the transmission from the planet with the greetings and felicitations, and then the hip hip hurrah. I love Nimoy's delivery of when he's like, and I believe it's pronounced tally-ho. Very classic Spock. So Spock decides to send McCoy Yeager, who's a meteorologist.
Yes. But also on the bridge. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I guess sometimes you bring the weatherman up to the bridge, be like, tell us about the weather on this planet.
Yeah, it's the wrong Star Trek for lightning in space, so.
Right, we gotta wait till 2009 for that.
Yep.
But Spock sends them down with these little, like, breathing things on their face because the atmosphere is toxic on the planet. And, Taylor, you made the comment when we were watching this that those don't look very secure.
I was like,
they don't
look
very
useless.
Airtight.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at one point they had considered using those orange shower curtain environmental suits from The Naked Time that was used in the opening of that episode. But I think it was Bob Justman who was like, no, those look terrible.
They are something. I like them, but yeah. And it's a lot easier not to have to use those. I mean, that's a pain. Were those were hard to, did they sew them into those or something ridiculous? I think they did. I remember reading about that.
I don't know if they sewed.
They weren't easy to put on, no matter what. I don't know if they're sewn into, but yeah, those things remind me of Empire Strikes Back when they go get the Minox off themselves.
Yeah,
it's almost the same. It's like off-the-shelf medical supplies. Is what it looks like.
But yeah, I was cracking up because there's like gaps, like but from the plastic where it meets on their face. Yeah. And I was just like, they would totally be breathing in whatever toxic air. And I think it's funny where like the medical officer, or not the medical officer, but oh man, I don't remember now if it's DeSalle or if it's
Yeager is the meteorologist.
And he, well, whoever pulls off their mask first, and he like does this really funny, yeah, like he's like, I'll be the guinea pig. And then he like nods all confidently, like, yeah, the air is breathable. But I thought it was smell funny because he wasn't totally sure. It seemed like right he wasn't over sure.
He didn't check, but he gave it the sniff test.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny.
But not only is it unusual that they're like, wait a minute, why can we breathe this atmosphere? That's weird. But also, like, why is there a castle here? So. Yeah. Life in Starfleet is really weird. You literally never know what you're going to run into.
DeSalle was like, y'all are not going to believe this shit.
He's just trying to get his communications beacon to work. And then, yeah, look, there's a castle. You know. I do like the little laser beacon thing.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a turkey baster, but I don't know. I just always liked that prop. I remember it from when I was a kid. I was just like, I want one of those, but...
Oh, I have some info on that prop that I'll share later in the show in the Gornegg section. So,
I like how they dress the castle. They put all that dirt on the bottom steps and make it look kind of like it's been neglected. It's been there forever, even though we know it's not. Yeah. It's nice. Trelane's thinking of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he probably put a lot of thought into all the details in here and still got them like wrong. Like, it is weird that like some of the things that we see in here, like, okay, some of the stuff is like clearly not of Earth, like some of
salt vampire.
Yeah, the very noticeable salt vampire. It's a nice touch that when McCoy sees the salt vampire, they do like some of the same the music from the Man Trap. I don't think that was intended as musical continuity, but it certainly works that way.
And if you have a prop like that, you should use it. I mean, it's
true. No, the salt vampire was a great looking suit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, there's a reason why they chose the Man Trap to be the first episode to air.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard some people say that, like, it doesn't make sense, McCoy's reaction to that thing. But, like, I think it makes perfect sense. He'd be like, oh, this was another one. Like, I knew that the one pretending to be Nancy was the last of its kind. I guess this was one of the ones that died before it died, you know, so. But I like him. Yeah. I actually like him, like, taking a moment to kind of look at it and be like, you know, he's a little unsettled by it.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing back some bad memories.
Maybe he's even thinking, too, like, if he knows that the salt vampire from the Man Trap is the last of their kind, but Trelane can make anything from his energy or whatever they talk about. So maybe it's just, like, maybe he's thinking, like, oh, this is, like, a recreation even. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If it's, like, a dummy or something. Like, maybe he's wondering from like, a medical, wondering if it's, like, you know, he has all the skulls and stuff in his office. Like, I wonder if he could tell, like, what's fake or what would be real, you know? Like, what's a recreation?
Well, Taylor, what do you think about when William Shatner and George Takei had to try to stand perfectly still when they were, like, frozen mannequins in Trelane's collection? Or wax figures. McCoy says, like, they have, like, no bio readings. They're, like, wax figures. What do you think of that?
I mean, I could see them wiggling a little bit.
Who did it better?
Shatner won, yeah.
Yeah, he was more still.
So I wonder what, like, you know, just knowing, like, how famously well they get along these days. Like, what did George and Bill talk about when they had to work together this day, standing next to each other like that? I wonder if it was, like, competitive. Like, I can stand still better than you. Or if that rivalry
yeah, but what
had
take,
kicked
what,
in yet.
Is this, like, take five? And they're like, this is old. And, yeah.
Yeah. They're tired.
Because first take, sure, they probably do pretty well. But
it's all that coffee that they had, you know? Their body is jittering out.
George Takei had too much coffee, and then he couldn't stand still. But Trelane reveals himself and frees Kirk and Sulu from their stasis, and he's playing the harpsichord. That's what you call this thing.
Yep, the distinct sound of the harpsichord. Yeah,
but very very flamboyant. Very he's like the old school. Upper class,
yeah,
fancy
caricature of an upper class gentleman,
which is also often presented as being very, you know, kind of like in self-indulgent or even like hedonistic, and that definitely like applies to him. He's just all about what can I do to have fun? What can I do that would be entertaining to me right now? Well, honestly, like, right now, like, this is probably, like, one of the most exciting things that's ever happened to him, because we find out he's a big fan of Earth. He has been watching Earth for some time. We don't know exactly how long or what all he's observed, but he's like, holy moly, I didn't even know humans could come out into space like this. I never thought I would actually see any of you. So this is, like... You know, he's like how, like, an Anglophile, like, we were talking about, like, England and France earlier, but, like, how an Anglophile would be, like, you know, obsessed with, like, English culture, or a Francophile obsessed with, like, French culture. He's, like, an Earthophile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, like, a little Midwest kid who's obsessed with Japanese culture.
Yeah.
Mostly from watching anime and movies. And then,
a weeb,
yeah,
right?
Like, a family comes, and then he's, like, they don't have crazy hair, and they're...
An anime weeb is the term.
Yeah.
But yeah, or like people who like go visit Japan because like they're really into anime, but then it's like it's not necessarily the stereotype they envision. Although I hear like a big thing in Japan is that a lot of kids there, like they really like European culture. And I think like France and Spain are the big ones. And so a lot of them like to go visit France and Spain. And it's like, oh, this isn't quite how I pictured it, but.
I think there's a word for Japanese people who visit Paris and are greatly, greatly disappointed and become depressed.
Okay. So, yeah.
I don't know what it is, but.
It's not a phenomenon
unique to
Trelane. That's like anyone can be, I guess, like, get hyper fixated on a unique culture that strikes their fancy. But yeah, I like his dialogue. Jill in the live audience commented on how his dialogue is fire in this episode. But yeah, it's fun. And William Campbell is so watchable and so energetic with all this stuff. But
he does a great job.
Welcome to an island of peace on my stormy little planet of Gothos. And he introduces himself as General Trelane, retired. So I don't want to be a general, but I want to be like something fathery retired. I don't know. Like, what would be
I
like
jump
good...
right to general retired, so yeah.
Would be like a good title for me. I don't know, but I feel like general's not applicable. But yeah, Kirk's not amused. They can't contact the ship, and they have the line of dialogue in here that Trelane's observations of Earth are 900 years out of date. Of course, we now know that Star Trek: The Original Series takes place in the 23rd century. They weren't quite sure at the time when they were making this. So 900 years would put it in like the 14th century. So
yeah.
And this is clearly like 19th century. Like he mentions people like Napoleon and
yes.
Hamilton, people who were active in the 17 and 1800s.
Yeah.
I can explain that though. I think I have a good headcanon, no prize explanation.
I have one too, but you go first.
okay, his planet Gothos might be 900 light years away, but his telescope, his camera that he's watching Earth with, might be somewhere like in between. And so it's only like 300 or 400 light years away from Earth. So it can transmit the information to him faster than the speed of light. So that's how I'm going to explain it to myself so that I can sleep at night. But what were you thinking, Joel?
My thoughts were, is he has, I assume it's just the machines there. I didn't think there'd be somewhere else, but that let him see Earth. But there's a dial that will let you go to the present. And he didn't really play with it too much, but he probably was intrigued by like some war. So he crept the dial a little bit to see how it went. And then he did it more than he thought and didn't realize because civilization doesn't change that much. The fashion does over those years because they don't get starched. You know, to him, it's all just super primitive. So I think he accidentally saw about, 600-700 years of history. But to him, it all looked the same because he was playing with one dial, not realizing what it was. It didn't ever get to the spacefaring part. But that seems like it would work. And something a kid would do is like kind of try and play with something, but not really understand it. So I think that works.
It's like his own little blink of an eye episode.
Yeah.
He can have the dial really forward fast or something.
Yeah. And I wonder if he ever could like go rewind, like, oh, I really liked that part. I really enjoyed the 7-year war. I'm gonna rewind that and watch that again.
Yeah, because he watched the English. He wants to see the other side. Yeah,
he lives outside of time.
He very well could, as we know, godlike beings in Trek certainly do. There's a nice suburb outside time, and they all live there. But
I want to see a Trelane who's like watching, or like Earth is like his TV show, you know. So I want to see him like if he's watching like modern day Earth, oh my goodness, like. The 21st century gets so crazy, you know, some of the things going on in our current times, which according to Star Trek is not necessarily going to work out very well immediately. It will in the grand scheme, but
but
hopefully the next couple of decades in real life are better than what Star Trek predicts.
Well, I hope the Romulans' interference slowly makes things a little different. So,
Maybe they'll end up helping us out after all.
Yeah, maybe we'll just all get really big shoulder pads. And it'll be a fashion World War III.
But also, in the live audience, I see Jill pointing out that the gator is not European. Trelane has, like, an alligator head above his fireplace. So, yeah, there are these inconsistencies, these things that don't make sense. As he does seem to be, like, you know, very much European.
But the gator is guarding Chekhov's guns right underneath it.
Mm. Oh yeah, those are the dueling pistols, huh? Mm-hmm. But it's also above the fireplace, which they comment on. Okay, the fireplace, like, it doesn't produce heat, and they make it pretty clear that this guy makes mistakes, and yes. A little bit of foreshadowing that he's eventually revealed to be a little kid. But there's the moment when Kirk tells him, "I got to get back to my ship. That there's 400 men and women on there. I have to get back to." And Trelane gets really excited about that. He loves the idea of
sex is upon your vessel. Oh, they must be beautiful. Oh my goodness,
the Earth women.
I like that McCoy takes a moment. He's like, "I'm just going to let this guy ramble. I'm going to scan him." He's like trying to be so sneaky. It's really cute.
Right, but when McCoy says that there's nothing there, so we can assume that Trelane, he is like one of these non-corporeal beings. He's one of like these energy beings, like the what his parents look like. These like glowing green lights. It's a very Star Trek thing. Like even at this point in Star Trek, it was starting to become a trope. We had the Charlie X aliens that raised Charlie. You know, there's a lot of similarities between this and Charlie X. Except Charlie X, he's a kid that we're meant to kind of feel sorry for, and Trelane is a kid that we're not meant to sympathize with as much. But they're both just what happens if you give like this juvenile mind, this immature mind, these incredible godlike powers? It's also a little bit serious and scary when Trelane takes the phaser from DeSalle. He sees DeSalle sneak up on him in the mirror, and grabs the phaser from him and is like, oh, I can, like, zap things in my collection and disintegrate them. This is cool. You humans have gotten even better at fighting war. Your weapons are really cool.
Yeah, he's really clueless about everything, but he knows how to turn the phaser from stun to kill because he's obsessed about weapons, even if it's outside the muskets. Yeah. At first, I thought that was just, like, a weird mistake. I was like, no, it fits. I think it works. Mm.
Yeah. He kind of has that soldier mind. Yeah.
He's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and then some of the, like, the dialogue he has about that, you know, where he's talking about how exquisite that is, or the actual line, I think, is marvelous. Yeah, there we go. Marvelous. Devastating.
Yep.
And we find out that he explains a little bit about his technology. It's similar to how the transporter works. You know, the transporter can convert matter to energy, energy to matter. So he has some type of ability to do the same thing. He's basically like kind of like a walking replicator. You know, he can like replicate things. It's kind of TNG, or almost kind of like how the TNG holodecks are explained in Encounter at Farpoint. There's a lot of Squire of Gothos in Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
Not just the Q stuff, but also some of the holodeck and replicator stuff is similar to Trelane's technology.
I do like that they work together and start to like gather evidence, like the fire that's not hot and stuff. But they like come to conclusions, like they're like, these things are all a little off. And they say he isn't all knowledgeable and he makes mistakes and stuff. But I think it's fun whenever we see like the cast in especially characters that aren't like regulars or whatever, all kind of like profiling like whatever the alien is that they're like that they're dealing with. So I enjoyed that a lot too, the like mystery of it.
You start off with him, oh, he's godlike, and then they're like, oh wait, he's not all knowledgeable,
right?
And then like later they're
gathering more information,
and then it's like
it's almost kind of like Roddenberry's greatest hits in this episode, because it's so many things that he really likes.
Is. But
like a big recurring theme in Star Trek that Gene Roddenberry was, you might even say, obsessed with. But the idea of man triumphing over God, man outsmarting a godlike entity, and having them like kind of use their brains like that, you know, it does show that like, yeah, these are men of science and they're explorers and they're not these military men like you might think if you've only observed this microcosm of Earth's previous history. Trelane doesn't even like observe like all of Earth. He's very like European focused. So you could say that, you know, Imperial Europe was probably some of the worst of humanity to try to emulate.
But they had flashier uniforms. So.
I mean, like they have some. I could understand wanting to, you know, dress up and cosplay some of that stuff. It's well designed outfits, I guess. But I guess let's move on to Kirk decides he's had enough. He wants to leave. He doesn't want to play with Trelane, so he has to get popped out. Another like boing, like he gets sent out into the toxic gas, just get like a little sample of what that would be like. And so like Trelane is pretty dangerous. As silly as he is, you can also take him as a serious threat. While that's going on back on the Enterprise, Spock and Scotty are trying to figure out a way to beam them up. The laser beacon's not powerful enough, I guess, to get the transporter beam. So they're able to route the impulse power into the scanners, and they do find like the, you know, like this one small area where there are some detectable life forms, and it's a bummer for Trelane. It interrupts him showing off his flag collection. He's like, oh, look at all my battle flags, like right now as we're recording this podcast, I'm in a room with all of my fun Star Trek memorabilia that I've collected over the years. This would be like, for me, this would be like if, like, I don't know, if like William Shatner and like George Takei and Jonathan Frakes and Jerry Ryan like were in a car that like broke down like next to our house, and then I was like, oh, all of y'all come in here, look at all of my cool Star Trek stuff, and then they're like, no, we want to get out of here. I'm like, oh no, you have to like look at this, like I have all of the original series on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray.
Have you heard of Eagle Moss?
Yeah. I feel like it would actually be more accurate if it was like a bunch of Star Wars actors, because then you're like showing off all your Star Trek stuff to them. Because like, this is like people out of place from this time that he's explaining to them. They're like, yeah, but this like isn't our stuff. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're close. We're humans, but we're not, you know, Imperial European or whatever. Like we're from the future.
But it's kind of a relatable thing. Like, I've been in that situation where it's like something that, like, it's like a special interest of yours that, like, not many other people are into. And then you finally find someone who would get it, and you just want to, like, just nerd out about it and just talk about it with them, you know? unfortunately, for Trelane, none of the Enterprise crew wanted to stay and look at his flags. As soon as they get, like, that signal from Spock, they're like, okay, we're actually going to beam on out of here.
Yeah, they were unamused.
Well, when they get to the bridge, it's kind of hard to, like, explain to Uhura. And we get the yeoman in this episode because Grace Lee Whitney had been fired from the show by this point, unfortunately. This would have been Yeoman Rand. I would say it should have been Yeoman Rand.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But so we get Teresa Ross. But Trelane follows them to the bridge. So I love his cape. This is the only time he has, like, the cape on. But if I was ever going to cosplay Trelane, which I'd be tempted to do if I thought it would be easier to find all this stuff, but it would be, like, this getup that has, like, the cape when he shows up on the bridge.
It's the going out outfit, yep, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like, though, he only has 3 medals, which is weird, because, like, every dictator on Earth always puts, like, 70 medals on.
Yeah, you think he would do, like, the Gaddafi thing.
He has good taste. He's got good taste. Only 3. It's good.
Yeah. Like, you think he would just be, like, all decked out with, like, a whole lot of medals. But, like, the if you go back and watch Star Trek VI, the CNC during the meeting at the beginning, he's got a lot of medals on him. But I guess he's, like, the highest ranking person in Starfleet. But I kind of would have liked to see more of Trelane on the Enterprise. I think that would be that'd be fun.
Perhaps we will, but not in this episode.
I should mention that as before they do beam up and Trelane does get, like, really, really pissy, he does kind of show some of these signs of his immaturity. So there was some foreshadowing there as well. But this is when we get the interactions between Trelane and Spock. It's when Trelane is on the bridge. So I really like that. Trelane is like, oh, I thought I was dealing with humans. Here's something else. This Vulcan guy, he asked, are the natives of the planet Vulcan predatory? And I love the line that Spock has in response. He says, not generally, but there have been exceptions. So it's almost kind of like, not usually, but fuck around and find out.
Yeah. I should think it's funny, like, when right before Kirk and the crew beam off of Gothos, Kirk says, party's over, thanks to Mr. Spock. And that's such, like, a humble husband brag where he's like, oh, he figured it out. Like, he's getting us out of here. But because he said that, Trelane heard the name Spock and comes onto the bridge with full spite for Spock. And so it gives some really good dialogue. And he's excited to meet Spock and be like, I don't like him. He came all the way there just to start shit. It's funny.
It's another Charlie X thing, too, because Charlie didn't like Spock.
Yeah, no one likes to be challenged when they want to have all the power.
You know, like Kirk had to tell Charlie, you need me to run the ship and I need him. Like, you're going to have to accept Spock. Like, so it's kind of a similar thing here with Trelane. But he's like, oh, you're a stick in the mud. You're ruining all my fun. You're a party pooper.
Yeah, Spock has some good advice for him, though. Or he's telling him, like, well, he says something about him being undisciplined or something like that. Power without discipline. And it's just really good on the bridge. Like, the dialogue between Spock and Trelane is so intense.
I do like every time Kirk comes back to the Enterprise after being away, someone shoves one of those little electronic signature things at him, and he has to sign it immediately. And I'm just like, what does he need to sign that right away for? He just got back. He was kidnapped.
Urgent paperwork.
That always amuses me.
Well, Trelane not only takes Sulu, Jaeger, Dassault, Kirk, and McCoy back to Gothos, but this time Spock, Uhura, and Ross are included. And he has a kind of a banquet set up, I guess. It's a pretty big chicken, but I if he's trying to be European, I don't think it would be a turkey. Like, isn't turkey a native to America? But it could be him just getting things wrong. But
they were exporting those pretty early. That's why it's called turkey, because they all went through Istanbul and were stamped with turkey.
Oh, I see. Got the name. Okay, and if he has, like, a big fancy aristocrat, I guess it would be kind of a fancy dish he would have.
Didn't they also eat peacock and pheasant?
Yeah.
So maybe it could be one of those too.
Nessens are small, but peacocks too aren't real. I don't know. Well, they have big feathers, but I don't know how much is actually. It's like an owl. Yeah. How much is under there?
Yeah, sure.
But the food, they comment, you know, McCoy says, like, yeah, like, the food has, like, no taste. The brandy has no taste, whatever. So, again, it's that...
Close, but no cigar.
The form, but not the substance.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny how, like, when Trelane is like, oh, you're so rude, introduce me to these women. And then and Kirk introduces him. He says, this is General Trelane. And then Trelane says, retired. We have the... That little added detail.
Mm-hmm.
Call me Squire.
But yeah, they kind of do a good job balancing Trelane's silliness, but also having him be a serious threat. Because, I mean, like, it is creepy when he gets all excited for women. He's like, whip the women? What, you have women on your ship? Uh-huh. And then,
yeah.
You know, it's even more disturbing when he has them captive in his castle. And some of the dialogue, it is, I guess if you were emulating the 1800s, I guess it might be it things works. That you would yeah. say, but again, great not example good, but... here of 1800s Europe is not, it's not something to copy. Yeah. He's like Teresa Ross. He's like, oh, the white woman, you're like Helen of Troy. You have like the beautiful face that started like this whole war. And then he's like Uhura and he's like, oh, you must be like a beauty that was captured on a raid of conquest.
Yeah. And he also calls her a Nubian prize and like has coloring like the Queen of Sheba and stuff. Yeah. I love her eyes in this scene because it's like he's progressively like adding on and she's just like looking at him like she's getting squintier and squintier. Like she looks at Kirk and she's like, are you going to really let him talk to me like that?
Yeah. It was probably Nichelle playing it like, herself, yeah, like yeah. this is how some white men would talk to me. It's pretty fucked up.
And then what do they do with her too? They make her the musical servant.
Mm-hmm.
He plays with Teresa, but he does do the reverse nomad and give her memories to play the harpsichord, which is good. But yeah, she's just the servant to entertain them all.
Yeah, this isn't the first time Uhura has been forced to participate in some musical numbers, as we learned from Strange New Worlds. But
oh, I was thinking of the movie where she's dancing.
Oh, that hasn't happened yet.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, she does get forced to participate.
Well, that was under her own free will, though. This is, I guess, like, she says,
Steinbach didn't make her do that.
Okay, that's fair.
I was thinking more of the musical, but Subspace Rap Study, but...
I was thinking Star Trek V.
The harpsichord. It's not really a musical instrument I know anything about other than, like, it looks and sounds similar to a piano.
I guess it was like a forerunner of the piano. It has a very unique sound, so you always can tell right away.
It's a little bit more twangy.
Yeah. Because it was so much shorter, all the wires, I believe. I might be making that up. But
while he's busy dancing with girls, that's kind of when Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Sulu are talking about, we know he makes mistakes. We know that he doesn't quite know how to recreate Earth things. He just knows the Earth forms, but doesn't know any of the Earth substance. He must have a machine that's doing that. They make some like really convenient guesses and conclusions here. But they're like, okay, there must be a machine that does this. And it's probably not the machine that maintains the safe atmosphere here. Cause that would be too big to be in this castle. Like this seems like kind of I don't know. I don't know why you're so confident. You don't know much about how this technology works, but you know, plot convenience, have to move the story forward. They're like, okay, whatever he has here, we need to destroy his machine that does these things for him, that allows him to turn energy to matter and matter to energy and all this stuff. And so they notice that it's the mirror. He never gets too far away from the mirror. He's always looking at the mirror. So this is when Kirk makes his play, and I love that we get a tricksy Kirk here. You know, he's got to go into his manipulation
full trickster.
Mode.
Yeah, full trickster.
But he's basically going to approach Trelane and talk to him as like, oh, this is how like some guy in old school Earth would react in the situation when he almost seems like jealous when he's like, why are you dancing with my yeoman? You know, but he challenges them to a duel over this.
I like how Teresa kind of just like, what the hell are you doing, Captain?
Yeah.
He pulls one of the gloves off and she's just like, it's okay. And then we get eventually the great TOS cliche of a computer behind a wall or something else. Amir.
But Trelane, again, you know, he loves this part too. When he, you know, he gets excited, like, oh, when Kirk, yeah, like, slaps him, and he's like, oh my god, I've watched so many Earth dudes duel each other. I'm finally gonna get to duel someone. This is so cool. The stage just keeps getting better and better. You know, he's so into it.
Yeah, his face, like, lights up.
It's also when we get the Hamilton reference, so... Mm-hmm. It's funny because Trelane actually does, like, the famous thing in the musical. Like, he does throw away his shot. He just shoots his pistol straight in the air. A little bit more foreshadowing, though, when he says something very childish when he's like, "My game, my rules." You know, Kirk is like, "Wait a minute, yeah, wait a minute." And, like, a pistol duel, both dudes shoot at the same time. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And Trelane's like, "No, we're gonna shoot one at a time. I go first." So.
You know what I thought was really funny too is, like, Kirk was upset that they weren't gonna shoot at the same time, right? Obviously, because it's not fair. But the way that Trelane convinces Kirk is he points his pistol at Spock. I'm like, out of all of the people that he's like been fighting for and stuff, like, you know, he could have pointed it at the Yeoman or at Uhura or whatever, like your stereotypical, like, damsel in distress, and he points it at Spock. Like, he already knows that Kirk is, like, Burke's real big fan of Spark. Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought that was funny. Because then Kirk, like, bends immediately. He's like, okay, we'll play by your rules.
Of course he bends immediately. But I think it's more of Trelane, like, doesn't like Spock. He's like, wait a minute, I want to play with humans, and you're, like, some weird other thing with pointed ears that, like, I don't like you. Like, you're ruining my fun and games with the humans.
He's too serious, and yeah.
I think there's multiple ways to read that. I think Trelane has picked up on something. Okay.
Oh, I guess he's jealous. He wants all of Kirk to himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kirk shoots the mirror. And this, one of the things I don't like in this episode, I guess, is the cartoony sound effects we get when the mirror gets shot. I guess it's like let the audience know, like, oh yeah, that did, like, some serious damage. There was, like, some high-tech computer shit hidden in there.
Yeah.
I love the 60s sparks that Star Trek always has. It's just whatever machine that made them. They look the same. It's glorious. I love it.
Yeah, I liked the sparks. I just didn't like the sound effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the visual is spot on with the cracked mirror, sparks, smoke. You can see the part of the machine. Yeah.
But Trelane is seriously pissed off at that. It's like the angriest he's ever been in the episode up to this point. And he says to Kirk, you've earned my wrath. Go back to your ship, all of you, and prepare. You're all dead men, you especially, Captain. So he's threatening to kill the entire crew and especially kill Kirk. He's going to be especially killed.
Double kill.
Dead, right. Dead.
Yeah, he gets kind of...
emphasis, for sure. Yeah.
He gets kind of repetitive with his threats. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, maybe he has, like, a Q-like ability to, like, kill someone, revive them, and kill them again. So maybe that's what dead would be. He's just gonna kill them three times. But they're free to go back to the Enterprise. I guess Kirk is like, okay, let's just, like, try to get the hell out of here. Yeoman, get out of that dress.
He gets a thing to sign right away.
I felt like that was such an awkward delivery, like, when she's like, I'll go change or something. And there's, like, this awkward pause before he says something about Cinderella or go change your glass slippers or whatever. It was such an awkward delivery. I was like, it would have been great if they had just, like, cut that last line. I think would have been less awkward.
It was going for comedy, and that line doesn't really.
Yeah, it was weird.
I think you might turn in your glass slippers. The ball is over.
Yeah. I was like, that's such a weird thing to say. Like, stop.
But then he has like that big smile.
Yeah, fairy tale outfit at work is kind of weird too, but never happened to me.
The planet and ship cat and mouse game.
Yeah,
they think fun. they're at warp, fleeing the planet, and then all of a sudden it shows up in their course ahead of them. And whenever they try to change course, the planet somehow moves to show up in front of them again. And that is that seems very Q-like to me. Like, that's some, like, you're a pretty powerful alien if you're relocating a planet that quickly and casually. You know, we know this is also, like, a custom-made planet. Like, Trelane has built this planet, so maybe it's built for this kind of thing. But
and you get the feeling, too, he could crash into the Enterprise if he wanted, but he keeps getting just near them and sort of everything but saying neener. And
yeah, like he likes the chase.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he's toying with them. I got literally like how a cat would play with a mouse, you know, like that's our cats like to torture bugs, and they'll find like a moth or something and corner it, chase it, but like they don't kill it, they just keep playing with it.
Yeah, so. They're demons sometimes.
Ah, I see you've been studying predators too.
Yes, yes. exactly. Trelane would totally be like a cat guy. Like he would have a cat.
Oh yeah.
But you know, like Kirk is like, no, I've had enough of this. I'm gonna beam down to that planet and deal with this asshole. So I kind of like Kirk's attitude of just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go like confront him directly again.
Yeah,
like, I'll die. It's okay. Yeah,
yeah. He's very like self-sacrificey here, but he's like that annoyed with Trelane. But it's also in character with Kirk. We know that he always, you know, yeah, like prioritizes the ship and the crew over
and
himself.
He is obsessed with Kirk, Trelane. So
yeah.
But I like that Kirk doesn't even make it to the transporter room. Like, the way that it's edited, it's like as soon as he steps onto the turbo lift leaving the bridge, he instantly appears in Trelane's courtroom.
Yeah. Trelane kidnapped him.
Again, more shades of Encounter at Farpoint. Very much like Q putting Picard on trial in that episode. You know, that like, TNG is bookended with Judge Q over Picard. Yep. And then that comes up again as like a big part of Star Trek Picard. So
yeah, season 3 of Picard brings it back.
So a huge part of the Q character, and specifically the relationship between Q and Picard, is seemingly lifted from Squire of Gothos. But here, I guess, Trelane is not really, he's not trying humanity. He's not trying, like, Kirk is like a representative of anyone else. He's just putting Kirk himself on trial.
Small scales.
For, what is he charged with? The high
treason.
High crime of treason against the superior authority, conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Insurrection.
The attempt to form an insurrection. I wish that there were, like, consequences for insurrection in real, like, Bolsonaro, the former president of Brazil, who tried to attempt to tried to assassinate Lula da Silva, his political rival. He's like in the Brazilian government, they're like, you know what? You're not allowed to run for president for like 20 years, because it's like, I really wish we had a rule like that in our country when a former president tries to attempt an insurrection. But
We could send them to the cornfield too.
You know, I can think of a few alternatives.
It's another show, but it's okay.
But yeah, the courtroom is fun. The trial, the judge, Judge Trelane. It's kind of like Looney Tunes almost. You know, like when the character could just, it's a cute kind of thing to do. But like when he can just like appear in like these different outfits and stuff. Like that's a big thing with Q. You know, like he might be a World War II army general. He might be a delivery man bringing flowers to Gene Luck Pickard. He might be in a mariachi band. You know, like Q liked to like change in these different characters like this.
Yeah. It's very theatrical. Yeah. And like, he's like committed to the bit, you know?
But like, it's like a Bugs Bunny kind of thing to do, you know? It's like something like they would do on like the Animaniacs or something. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where William Campbell wanted to have the correct wig to be this English judge.
He had a special interest.
Yeah, yeah. The wig they had on set was a French wig. So I think like the French wig, it was like, it has like that short little ponytail on the back of it. It doesn't have like the long like curls I think in like the English court or the British court they still wear like wigs
they
like
do
this,
a version so. Yeah, it's not this big, but
so I was gonna say what a silly country that I remembered where I lived. I guess he's ready to kill Kirk over this, you know. He's gonna hang him, and then Kirk has to get tricksy again when he basically says, like, oh, there'd be no sport in just executing me, you know?
I do like whenever Kirk basically admits to being guilty or whatever, but Trelane says, you do admit to all of these,
like a small victory, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Kirk says, yes, anything! Like, he's, like, so desperate, like, just to save the ship and get them out, to get Trelane, like, happy enough to leave everyone else alone.
We're distracted enough for them to get away.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, continuing his tricksterness by, you know, using Trelane's rage and, you know, experimenting, whatever, to, like, keep his own life. Like, even though he's like, oh, my original goal of, like, saving the ship that's now passed, he's like, okay, now I can think of myself. How can I, like, delay my murder or my execution or whatever? So it's really smart.
He's got the con man patter. Sure, you could do that. But you know what you also could do? This much more fun thing where you chase me around.
Right.
Yeah. You almost have to kind of like inception it in the other person's mind.
It has to be their idea.
You have to like lead them to conclude that idea, and then they'll be on board with it. And then you can kind of compliment them on, oh, what a great idea. Yeah, yeah, let's do a royal hunt. Why don't you come hunt me instead? But he does ask for the condition that the Enterprise must be set free. And you know, Trelane says, always back to your ship. Oh, well, if it will add spice to the pursuit, I accept your terms, Captain. But he's kind of jealous, you know, here. You always think about your ship. Why don't you ever think about me, you know? I guess that entitlement, though, that's very and kind of egocentric, you know, it's, and narcissistic. Yeah. That's all very childish. So it's not a shocker when he starts talking like a little kid at the end. You know, it's they build up to that pretty well.
Yeah.
And I also love the visuals when we see like the shadow of the hangman's rope. And then when you see like the rope like coming closer and closer to Kirk and like Shatner looking more and more nervous. Also, I love when Trelane, he takes off the judge wig and then grabs the executioner mask. He's like, oh, I got to play.
Which is right there. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to play Earth that. Judge. Now I get to play Earth executioner. So he's having like, fun.
But he's petulant about it. He's like, change. This is all fast. This is all so rote. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't quite ready for the fun and games to end. And Kirk sees that and capitalizes on that opportunity. But yeah, there's like no obvious end game on how Kirk can get out of here. So it's like he's really seemingly up shit's creek. I guess he's still gonna hope for the best, but it seems unlikely he'll be able to escape Gothos at this point. Are y'all ready to move on to the royal hunt and the big ending?
Predator versus Predator.
Yeah. So the royal hunt, Kirk is released outside of the castle to get a head start, and Trelane chases him around.
Like 30 seconds later, he comes after him. Head start. I love that.
That's so very childish.
It's yes, it's great.
Like, did you count your 10 Mississippis, or did you just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like playing hide and seek with like a little kid, and then like as soon as they start counting, they have like their head up trying to like see where you went.
50.
And...
Yeah.
But they also like they fight around like the same tree a couple of times, but it's
a nice tree.
In this fight, in like the sword fight, or like at one point Kirk is fighting Trelane with a stick against the sword, a little one sided there, but when they shot this, William Campbell actually dislocated his shoulder. Ouch. But then it like immediately snapped back in place. I think they still had to like stop shooting. It was a painful injury, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been, I guess. But yeah, he must have been like really giving it his all in like a real, you know, physical performance like that.
Yeah.
He's a big Errol Flynn fan.
Yeah, well, this is very like Errol Flynn. Taylor, have you ever seen the Errol Flynn Robin Hood from the 1930s?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, I'll put it on our list. We'll watch it sometime. It's a classic.
This stuff's amazing. Errol Flynn, yeah.
Cool.
You'll like it, though. Like, all the old 30s sets and wardrobe to look at. We'll have a lot of fun with that.
Christopher Lee had a broken pinky that looked different from the rest because Errol Flynn accidentally nicked it once in a movie.
Mm. Yeah, Christopher Lee lived an interesting life.
He did.
Never made it to Trek, but the other Star franchise.
No, close. Space 1999. You got there.
But also Lord of the Rings, James Bond, lots of things. So
Dracula, Frankenstein, all the Hammer.
Kirk finally figures it out that he's dealing with a little kid. He takes Trelane's sword from when like Trelane has him cornered. Kirk snaps the sword over his knee. He smacks him around in the face a couple times.
Yeah. Slap, slap.
Yeah. So Kirk slaps Trelane multiple times in this episode. Yeah. But it's like at this moment that Trelane's parents, the glowing energy green balls of light show up. Like, why at this moment? Were they watching this whole thing? Like, what were they?
It seems I think that this is them checking in. They're like, oh, it's about to be time for dinner. Let's go get our kid. And they're like, oh, yeah, we left him over
here.
They
looked away for 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
So and it's they come just back cool. And they're like, oh, dang.
It's just a coincidence. They look back, like, right at the time that Kirk figured it out. Like, right around the time the story has a satisfying conclusion, that's when they just happen to notice what's going on.
It's part of being a godlike being. Godlike timing. Yep.
They had the feeling.
Joel, I thought you were going to say that's part of being a parent, is you just have like that parental instinct. You know when to enter.
Well, hopefully, but sometimes it's not. And then they get that marker out and they write on the wall. And, oh, my God.
We had a really great comment in the live audience from Commodore Trev. He says, the gator is a nanny cam. That explains everything.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Maybe they're like, wait a minute. Wait, hold on. I haven't heard from Trelane in a hot minute. He's up to something.
Okay. Okay.
Wait.
Let's go find this kid. God, dog. Always something with him.
Yeah.
It's like when you see your dog and you're like, oh my God, what's in your mouth? And the dog. They know those words somehow. I don't know. But
I like the way that they shoot Trelane, like the camera looking down on him, it really helps frame him as a little kid, you know, and he's like looking up at his parents. William Campbell, he gets very childish in his voice though, and he's like, I would have won, and he's all whiny.
I was just playing.
And they're telling him that he's not taking good care of his. It's pretty funny though. Like, I think if you were watching this in for the first time. In the 1960s, being like, okay, this is like an interesting story. I'm not sure exactly where they're going with this. And then you get here and it feels appropriate because there was like some good foreshadowing for it. But it's like, oh, this is kind of a cool. It's almost like the reveal of like, oh, look, Corby was an android. It's kind of like that cool like Twilight Zone type of ending. That seemed to be like a big trendy thing in science fiction in the time. But like, I love when Star Trek, when the original series has these kind of these cool like twist reveal, and it's very like a like what M. Night Shyamalan built a whole career doing in movies.
I had to look it up to see if Scheider, what is his name? He didn't write for Twilight Zone, but he I think everyone watched the Twilight Zone and knew.
Yeah, I think it was something that like a lot of like literature, like
it's very short story.
Yeah, a lot of like the pulp mags and short stories and stuff would have been doing at the time. So very much the science fiction style of the time to have like these twist endings like this. But
yeah,
I love how the parents talk to Trelane and I love how they talk to Kirk. They're very polite. You know, they're so like it does sound like if your kid, you know, like went and fucked up in the neighbor's yard or something. Yeah. It is how you would go talk to them, though.
Yeah, they're like, don't worry, we're going to punish him. We've been indulging him for too much.
Yeah, this was our fault. Just it won't happen again. You know, we'll maintain your life support until you get out of here and go about your way.
We'll pay for any damages that my kid did to you.
Yeah.
The broken window. Yeah.
I just realized there was no one dies in this episode, so no body count.
Yeah.
But that's good though. Like at the end, like you can. You know, you can kind of like forgive little kid Trelane. And I don't know if I would want him to come. You know, like we're kind of we're wondering, you know, is Rhys Darby going to be Trelane in Strange New Worlds? And like, yeah, I don't know if like if Trelane was killing people, I don't know if I would be rooting for him to come. Although I think I'd be OK if he evolves into like a darker character. But I'm thinking that if that is Trelane that we see in Strange New Worlds, and like Mariner even says in those old scientists, you know, like they didn't have Q. They kind of had a Trelane situation back in these days. So it does sound like that there are, that it is likely that Trelane is going to show up and be the Q of Strange New Worlds. Maybe he'll show up once a season in these remaining three seasons. I think it's going to be a timey-wimey thing where he's like future Trelane after these events.
That would work better.
He's grown up a little bit and now he's come back in time. It's still going to be weird.
Yeah,
like.
It wouldn't work otherwise for Trelane to encounter humans before this.
Yeah.
This has to be Trelane's first encounter with humans. See, my thing was, I thought Rhys Darby was just like Trelane's cousin who started Trelane on the Earth thing. He's like, he had met humans, he'd researched humans, and it was like, hey, you should look at these humans through your telescope thing. And then
another possibility is Trelane is a last name, and maybe he has a brother.
Yeah.
This is like Kyle Trelane and Gavin Trelane. And the other Charlie X type thing is that when he fades away, you know, instead of Charlie X being like, I want to stay, he's like, I would have won. I would. But whiny kid fades away. Parents apologize. And then I love the expression on Shatner's face when he hails the ship on his communicator to come pick him up. And he's just like, man, that was another weird-ass first contact. Life in Starfleet is so strange, y'all. It is, is something else.
I do like Kirk's expression as well whenever he realizes, like, oh, that the green balls are Trelane's parents. And he's like, oh, he's a kid. Like, there is, like, a moment of Shatner, like, having this really teeny tiny expression where it's, like, this realization. Yeah. He plays it so subtly, but it's really good.
He's like, so that explains everything.
Yeah, I appreciate these scenes. I feel like he puts a lot of effort and very little movement, you know?
Yeah.
Well, back on the ship, Kirk explains to Spock that he was just a mischievous boy, and he talks about...
A naughty boy.
It's like what every little kid does. You're like dipping little girls' curls in inkwells, stealing apples from the neighbor's tree, tying cans on... I guess he was going to say on like a cat's tail, but he doesn't finish that sentence.
I don't know.
Yeah. I like how Nimoy just kind of looks at him like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, that's some weird shit. You were a weird kid.
You were mean.
But I think this is kind of... strange dialogue, as I don't think anyone in the 23rd century would use
would pull these wells
or would or would stealing apples from the neighbor's tree.
You know, he's a stack of legs on or stack of books on legs. Got it the wrong way, but so he's read a lot, and then I think he was thinking about all kinds of old timey things because Trelane, and he's he's seeing all this ancient stuff recreated. So I think he was thinking about stuff like that. This is stuff he's read. It's not current. To anyone on Earth now, but Kirk has read this stuff.
It's very, I guess, early 20th century.
Yeah, I remember my mom saying that stuff about the dipping Kirk.
Yeah, I've heard that expression in other things, but I might have actually heard it first in The Squire of Gothos. Like, I don't know. This might be like when I first heard like that term, dipping hair in inkwells, but.
Yeah, it's definitely the only time I've heard it is in this episode.
I think I had heard it before I watched this episode when I was like 8. I think my mom said it. We used to say it or something.
But
or maybe I'm misconstruing, but I was young. I was a naughty boy, too.
Did you ever tie cans on things that shouldn't have cans tied onto them?
I don't think I did that, no.
Did you ever steal apples from the neighbor's tree?
They didn't have apples.
I was stealing peaches from a neighbor's tree.
I've stolen dewberries from a neighbor's bush. I guess that's similar. But that's it for Trelane. The ship continues on its voyage to Beta 6, and everyone lives happily ever after, at least until the next episode.
Oh, I forgot the one thing I was going to mention. I'm sorry. Was that the reveal at the end that he's a childlike being makes this rewatching the entire episode just so much more enjoyable. Because, yes, every single line of dialogue from Trelane just it makes even more sense when you see the ending. And so it begs for rewatches in that sense, and it works really well.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, like dialogue from Kirk where you can tell like, oh, he's starting to figure it out. When he there's one line when he says, don't be too upset by what you see, gentlemen. After all, his actions are those of an immature, unbalanced mind. So yeah. Kirk was already thinking like, dude, you act pretty childish.
Yeah, but I think there's like a difference too between like recognizing that they're a child and them also just being immature, like and like horrible as an adult. You know what I mean? Because I think like when he was saying an unbalanced mind, he's still not thinking juvenile.
He thinks that he thinks this is like an adult who acts like a kid, and then at the end you get the reveal like, no, this is like a
he's
straight
actually
up kid.
A kid. Yeah, exactly. Like he's definitely getting closer to understanding, but I think he doesn't realize until the very, very end. That's how I read it anyway.
That is how kids like to make believe, you know. It's pretty common for kids to they always play as like they're like an adult, you know. They're like the doctor or the cop or the teacher or like the whatever. Like they rarely make believe as like they're also a kid in their fantasy, you know. They like to pretend to be grown ups. So,
and it's not like Trelane would have corrected him, you know. He didn't want him to know he's a youthful or a juvenile. Like he wants him to think he's an all like powerful being, right? So
Like he chose like the body of like I'm gonna go appear to be like this 43-year-old dude, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if that covers it for our episode breakdown of The Squire of Gothos, I'll go ahead and go into the Gorn Egg section of the show, where I like to bring up some of the Easter eggs and jokes and continuity connections in the episode. Starting with the casting of William Campbell. By the way, not to be confused with Billy Campbell, his birth name is also William, but that's confusing. But who would play O'Connor in TNG and Prodigy. So I always have to stop and think when I'm talking about these actors. I was like, wait, which one goes by Billy? Which one goes by William? But William Campbell is Trelane. But he also returns to Star Trek, the original series, in season 2 as the Klingon Koloth in The Trouble with Tribbles. And appears as Koloth again in Deep Space 9, the episode Blood Oath. And also Trials and Tribulations when they use footage of Tribbles, The Trouble of Tribbles.
Yes.
Nice.
But yeah, they actually, I didn't know this until recently, but the casting director wanted Roddy McDowell as Trelane, which that would have been interesting casting. I'm a big fan of Roddy McDowell.
He certainly could have done that.
Malcolm McDowell's father, from Soren from Star Trek Generations, but who was Alexander Siddig's uncle. So that makes me think, wait a minute, does that make Roddy McDowell Alexander Siddig's grandpa? Like, no one ever says that. I don't know if the McDowell connection is like that. I don't know if that's like by marriage. I don't know if like Malcolm McDowell married into someone who's related to Alexander Siddig, or if like, oh no, like Malcolm McDowell's sister is Alexander Siddig's mom. I'm not sure exactly. If anyone knows that, please explain it to me, because I'm just really curious, is Alexander Siddig the grandson of Roddy McDowell or not?
We need more Trek family trees for the actors. Yeah.
I should also point out...
I don't know either. Yeah.
Koloth also appears in the animated series, but not voiced by William Campbell, because 90% of the people in that show are voiced by James Doohan. And then speaking of the animated series, our TAS expert, Aaron, is here in the live audience, and he's pointing out Billy doesn't go by Billy anymore. It hasn't since the 90s. So he's William Campbell. So they're both William Campbell now. That's confusing.
Well, somebody got the SAG William Campbell. I don't know who. I have seen him in at least one movie, yeah. It was about this time.
William Campbell?
Campbell, not Billy, but our William Campbell from this episode.
I also want to point out that I always thought that in Blood Oath, I love that episode of Deep Space Nine, but they kind of switched the personalities of Kor and Koloth. Koloth was, he's almost kind of like the Trelane Klingon. He's a little bit of a more fun Klingon, you know, and the Trouble with Tribbles. And in Deep Space Nine, they made him have, he was the one who had like the stick up his ass. But I guess that was like, oh yeah, when their sons died, Kor really softened and Koloth really hardened. And I think that's interesting.
Mm. They say like the same boiling water that hardens an egg softens the potato.
So Jill says Alexander Siddig's mother's brother is Malcolm McDowell. So I assume then her dad is Roddy McDowell. So I've just never seen, I've always seen people frame it as Alexander Siddig is Malcolm McDowell's nephew. I've never heard anyone ever say Alexander Siddig is Roddy McDowell's grandson. So, but I guess perhaps he is. So, but some other returning actors from this episode. I should mention this was William Campbell's first Star Trek episode, and it was also the first for Bart LaRue, who played the voice of Trelane's father, and Barbara Babcock, who played the voice of Trelane's mother. Both of them would appear in more Star Trek episodes after this, though. A lot of times as a voice, but sometimes with their faces. Bart LaRue did the voice of the Guardian of Forever in The City on the Edge of Forever. He was one of the providers in the Gamesters of Triskelion. He was the Roman announcer in Bread and Circuses. He was the Nazi newscaster in Patterns of Force. And he was the Excalibur in The Savage Curtain. Barbara Babcock went on to be Mia 3 in A Taste of Armageddon, the voice of the Beta 5 computer, and the voice of Isis the cat in Assignment Earth. She did the, like, the meowing and purring sounds. That was actually her. And she voiced the Tholian in The Tholian Web. She played Falana in Plato's Stepchildren and did the Zatarian voices in The Lights of Zatar.
Yeah, they really like to reuse people. The dad does sound like his Guardian voice, pretty much. I think Guardian is somewhat modified.
And he sounds exactly like that when he does the Excalibur. I guess when he's like the...
On screen, yeah, it seems a little different. But
he just has like his announcer voice. I mean, he was like a voice actor. Like, that was like his training.
Yeah, because he had that kind of voice. I mean.
Right. Yeah, it's like, it's easy to pay attention to his voice kind of guy. So, you know, TV announcer, news announcer, he got parts like that. The laser beacon that Joel was talking about earlier, being a fan of that prop, they actually reused a prop from the episode I mentioned earlier, Charlie X, and it shows up again in the Doomsday Machine. Kirk is like trying to use it to weld or something, like solder or something. So it shows up a couple of times. And that's one of those
Trek tradition.
What's it? Irvin Feinberg. It was one of his props. They called them the Feinbergers. Whatever the props that he would find to use on the show. It's like, oh yeah, we can use this for laser beacon. We can use it for like Kirk to weld. You can use it to work on the Jeffries tube and Charlie X. So, and we talked about the salt vampire appearing in Trelane's castle. Also, the other alien creature costume that was reused is the bird creature. It's what Trelane zaps with the phaser and disintegrates, but the bird creature that was also locked up in the cage with Jeffrey Hunter's Christopher Pike. It looks a little different in this episode. Like, it doesn't have like the same beak on it, but
it looks like he has a big mustache.
I kind of wish we saw it more though in The Squire of Gothos. I kind of like it, but does not make sense if you're trying to emulate Earth, but as they mentioned multiple times, Trelane doesn't always get it right.
Mm-hmm. These are his other special interests before, like wacky things.
Michael Barrier had a decent amount of screen time in this episode as Dassel. He's going to show up in two more TOS episodes after this. He's a biologist in This Side of Paradise. Still in a gold shirt for some reason, even though he's a science officer in that. He's the guy who gets in a fight with Sulu when they're gardening in that episode, when Kirk and Spock make the everyone get off of the happy spores and start fighting each other. So he's the guy who picks the fight with Sulu. And he actually becomes assistant chief engineer in the episode Cat's Paw in season 2 and is even seen in command of the Enterprise in that episode. But I always get DeSalle confused with DePaul, Sean Kinney's character, who shows up a couple of times in the original series. But yeah, not particularly memorable to me. I don't know. I think he's just kind of like a boring white guy. Doesn't really leave an impression. But commanding the Enterprise, that's kind of a big deal. So good for DeSalle. And the wardrobe that Trelane wears in this episode, it was actually not made by Bill Tice. It was something that they rented, which they didn't do a lot of in the original series, partly because when you borrow something, you never know where else it's going to show up. Trelane's big blue coat was also seen in Gilligan's Island. It was seen in The Monkees. And I just learned about this, but it was worn by Dracula in the movie Blackula.
And who stars in Blackula, but Trek alumni from, oh God, what's his name? The M5 episode. William Marshall, yes.
Okay, I've never seen Blackula, so William
Marshall. It's very interesting. William Marshall plays an African prince who is sick of slavery. This is like the 16th century or something. Obviously, why would slavery is horrible. So he goes to Dracula and is like, you need to help us. You can defeat the European colonizers. And Dracula is a dick and is just like, no, I'll make you a vampire instead. Screw you. And locks him in a coffin for 400 years and he wakes up in L.A.
I need to see it at some point. I love William Marshall.
It's good.
Before he was Dr. Daystrom to me, he was he would show up on Pee-wee's Playhouse as the king of cartoons.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that was my introduction to him initially. But I love his performance as Daystrom in The Ultimate Computer. That would be a fun backtracking retrospective. The Ultimate Computer, maybe someday.
That's a great episode,
especially now with all the concern over AI. So. The music played on the harpsichord in this episode, Trelane plays the Sonata in C major K159 and Sonata in G minor K450 by Domenico Scarlatti. Then Trelane has Uhura play Roses from the South by Johann Strauss. And then the last thing I got, Beta 6, the planet that they are en route to. You actually see it if you watch the remastered version of this episode and the very final shot before the credits. You see the Enterprise approaching Beta 6. But Beta 6 was again mentioned in Star Trek in Star Trek Discovery in the episode Scavengers. Michael Burnham asks Osira's nephew, Tolor, if his laborers, his slave laborers he had in that junkyard, if some of them were from Beta 6. So not to be confused with Beta 3, the planet where they keep worshipping Landru. But that's all I got on Gornet.
Another machine behind a wall.
Yes. It. Yeah. Well, we were talking about, you know, recurring Star Trek tropes. So, yeah. Joel, you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I think, the things I was going to talk about was, the parents, other roles in Trek, because, they hit a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Babcock had done that many, because I knew about the on-screen ones, but I forgot about the voice ones.
Yeah, so I think she has 7 total and he has 6 total. So.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And then William Campbell has 2 roles in TOS, so between the 3 of them, that's 15 different characters between the 3 actors. So they definitely got a lot of mileage out of this out of the guest stars in this one. But y'all just heard all of us talk about this episode for over an hour, so you know how we think about it. Please leave a comment. Let us know your thoughts on the episode. You can comment on YouTube. You can talk to us in the TexTrek Discord server. Links to that wherever you are watching or listening. You can reply to my post on social media. We might share your responses next week. We received some responses on last week's topic, the TOS episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of, with Roger Corby and the Androids. Our friend Sub Commander Tall on Twitter said, I feel like Chapel could have been characterized with a bit more depth, but otherwise, I really enjoy this episode. It's a classic concept, and the guest stars have a lot of charisma. You can't beat Shirley Jackson and Ted Cassidy. So, Andrea and Robo Lurch Ruck. Also, the sets are great. I believe it was the second most expensive episode after City on the Edge of Forever. So I don't know. I should have fact checked that. I don't know if it was the second most expensive season one episode, but I would certainly believe it. They had to build all those caves. So.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And then the rock prosthetics.
And the spinny thing.
Oh, yeah, the spinny thing. Yeah, that was a pain in the ass.
That had to work. I mean, they sped it up, but it had to work.
Yeah, and the Ruck prosthetics really looked good and held up. But
The makeup on him, on Cassidy, is very good. In the remaster, you can see his neck skin, but you could never see that on a CRT, though.
I'll wrap up now because we're running a little late, but I just want to let everyone know, please come back next week. We're going to have another backtracking retrospective with Dave, and it's going to be the episode Arena, the OG Gorn episode. So before we see the Gorn-tastic season premiere of Strange New Worlds, we're going to go back to the very first appearance of the Gorn in the original series.
Hegemony episode minus one. That's right, arena.
Yeah, yeah. but it takes place after. So
tiny wimey, wibbly wobbly. That's Trek.
But it's going to be interesting trying to square the TOS Gorn with the Strange New Worlds Gorn. As regulars of our show might know, I love Strange New Worlds, but I really don't like how they handle the Gorn. Those are pretty much the only episodes of Strange New Worlds I dislike. I'm not enthused for the first episode of Strange New Worlds Season 3. I'm looking forward to the other ones after that. But I think I'm going to have a lot of fun talking about Arena with Taylor and Dave next week. So we love some classic Gorn. So that'll be fun. So please come back for that. And until next time, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Subscribe to YouTube to watch the Text Trek podcast live or listen to us later on your favorite podcast platform. Follow Stephen Fothery on socials at TX Trek. Thank you and take care.